1 Peter 2, verses 13 through 17 says this: "Submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every authority instituted among men, whether to the king as the supreme authority or to governors who are sent by him to punish those who do wrong and to commend those who do right. For it is God's will that by doing good you should silence the ignorant talk of foolish men. Live as free men, but do not use your freedom as a cover-up for evil. Live as servants of God. Show proper respect to everyone and love the brotherhood of believers. Fear God and honor the king." Simon, a friend of mine who passed away a couple of years ago, was a member of the Dutch resistance during World War II. He joined the resistance movement for a couple of reasons. One, if he hadn't, he was a single guy above the age of 18. And if he hadn't joined the resistance and kind of lived throughout the war running from home to home, he probably would have ended up in a factory in Germany. And in those factories, they were making bombs and different war supplies, so the British tended to bomb those. So no one from Holland or the Netherlands really wanted to work in those factories, so he decided to hide. The second reason is he kind of had heard these vibes about what was happening with the Jews. Now, he didn't understand the horror of what was taking place, the concentration camps, but he knew that the Germans weren't treating them well, and it raised something inside him that he felt like he needed to do something wrong. He felt that the government wasn't living up to all it should be, and he wanted to revolt against the Germans. So Simon risked his life navigating throughout Holland at night, transporting Jews, shot down Allied planes. This guy was just one of these old guys that we are losing because they're passing away, who had stories about everything. And I'll never forget stories that he would say where he had to put his Christian faith really at task and wonder what he was going to do. He didn't want to really fight, but there were times when he would be hiding in a barn and there would be a haystack full, and inside of the haystack there would be Jews and army officers and everybody he was trying to protect. And he would be above on a hayloft, and a German officer would see that something was up, and he'd come walking in, and he would have to have his gun ready and think in his mind, am I gonna have to shoot this German in order for me to protect the others? He faced a lot of decisions that you and I don't face. Was he going to listen to the government, the German government, and the occupation, or was he going to revolt? Was he going to submit or not? Now, Simon was a devout Christian, like I said, and most of the time he felt proud of what he did. He actually said he never had to shoot anybody, but there was moments where he had to kind of ponder it. But there are times where he wondered if he did the right thing. And he wondered if he really should have submitted himself to the German authority, maybe gone and worked in the bombs, or was his resistance something that God would have allowed or even been a part of? Well, I don't know about you, but I pray that we never have to face that kind of decision that Simon had to face. But Peter's passage begs us the same question. Do we submit or willingly obey to every authority for the Lord's sake or not? Now, we're going to try and attempt this question by actually asking three questions. First of all, what is submission and why is it hard for us? And second of all, what does this passage call us to submit to and what does that look like practically in our lives? And third, what's Peter's motivation for this? Why is he calling us to submit? Well, I don't know about you, but I don't like the word submission. I mean, if I hear the word submit, it almost is like chalk or the fingers on a chalkboard, which the younger we get, you might not have even had to experience that with whiteboards. But it's the sound, the screeching sound that just kind of grates at you, and you don't necessarily want to do it. You know, I don't necessarily like to submit to anything. And the definition of submit that I use is willfully giving up your rights or willfully obeying or placing yourself under someone else's lead. Now, to be honest with you, I don't like the word submit when I have to submit to other people, especially when they're doing things that I don't necessarily agree with. But I love the word submit when it comes to my daughter. I love for her to submit to me and to listen to me and to do what I tell her to do, even though she's only 15 months. I loved it when I was a supervisor of people when they submitted to me and did what I wanted them to do. But it still is difficult for us when we're those who have to submit. Well, why is that? What are the reasons? The reality is the reason why we hate to submit goes all the way back to the very beginning of humankind, back to the garden where Adam and Eve sinned. And what they did is they didn't submit to the laws that God had put up, and they ate from the tree of good and evil, and they let go, and they didn't submit to God's one rule, and sin entered the world because of it. So from the very, very beginning, submitting's been hard for us, and we reap the consequences of it. The second reason why we don't like to submit is pride. The reality is we all think we can probably do things better than the people in charge of us half the time. And so pride can keep us from submitting. I'll tell you that I think another reason why we don't necessarily submit is because we're Americans. America was built on sticking it to somebody and not submitting. If you don't believe me, ask the British. They're the ones we revolted against because we didn't want to live underneath their rule. And we have this ethos in America, this kind of attitude that our rights and our demands and what we want is what matters above everything else. You know, I kind of forgot, I've lived in America almost all my life, other than the few times I've traveled around, and you kind of forget how much that thinking permeates you until I hung out with my friend Barnabas, and I shared this story of Barnabas 2 weeks ago of using an idiom about the elephant in the room, and he was a Catholic priest that I worked with at the hospital, and it was amazing to me because Barnabas was completely African, had never spent any time in any other country other than Tanzania until he came to the United States, and he is part of a religious order, which means that he submitted to a group of priests. I forget the name of his order. He would always say it in his native language, so I couldn't really keep up. But he put himself under this order, and what it meant is that he was going to be a part of that order for the rest of his life. But it also meant that his job every year and everything that he did was under the guidance of the superiors that he had to listen to. And Barnabas was able to become a chaplain and move to the United States, something that he'd been dreaming of for 13 years, but finally got that opportunity. And when his renewal came up, when he had to try and figure out what was going on or what was going to happen next, we were talking about it as a group, and he said, you know, I really want to stay here in the United States and work as a chaplain, but I don't know if I can tell my superiors that. What American, when given the opportunity to share what he would want or what he thought he deserved, wouldn't take that opportunity? But for Barnabas, community was the big deal. It wasn't about individual rights. It was for the sake of the group that mattered, not necessarily his own wishes. And so he felt guilty even telling somebody what he wanted. He felt guilty because he always thought community was the biggest thing. Now, he did end up sharing what his desires were, and the superiors actually got him a job there. But it was painstaking for him to do that. You know, the other thing is, we live on the end of the Oregon Trail. And I don't know, like, I'm not a history buff, but the little bit that I've kind of followed this, everybody came out here and settled in Washington and Oregon because they did not want to live in the communities out west or out further east. They moved here because this is the end of the road. They couldn't go any further other than north and south because of the ocean. And I think that that really creates even more of an ethos in Portland and Vancouver because it says that we need to be who we are. We need to keep our rights. That's why as you drive around, you see the bumper stickers that say, "Keep Portland weird," right? No other city have I ever seen that other than Portland. But we are proud of the fact that we are going to keep to ourselves and do what we want to do. We don't like to submit. If you think you don't like to submit and you think that this may not apply to you, I want you to think about it. At least every student I know at some time will tell their friends that they are smarter than their teacher or their teacher has no idea what they're talking about. People in a church will say that their pastor's kind of crazy and we don't need to talk about him. Every athlete will sometimes question what the coach is doing or what play needs to be run. Everybody thinks they could do a better job than their boss at some point. Every sports fan thinks that they're smarter than their GM or their AD. And everybody thinks they're better than the politicians. If you have any doubts, just listen to talk radio. And I'm talking either sports talk or regular talk. we have this ethos that we're better than everybody else, and submission's hard because it goes against our culture. So what is it that this passage really calls us to admit? Well, I'll give you the short answer right away. Everything. 1 Peter 2, verses 13 through 14 says, "Submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every authority instituted among men, whether to the king as the supreme authority or to the governors who are sent by him to punish those who do wrong and commend those who do right." 17, the last verse that we looked at says, "Show proper respect to everyone, love the brotherhood of believers, fear God, and honor the king." This last list is pretty comprehensive. If you look at the different contexts, it's pretty much everything and anything you can imagine in your life. Show proper respect to everyone hits at our social and work settings. Love the brethren of believers hits our church life. Fearing God hits our spiritual life. And honoring the king deals with the political sphere. The thrust of what Peter is saying is this: Christians must live well in, by giving each type of relationship its due. We must submit to those around us. This means that Christians should be civil citizens. And Peter's been reminding his people over and over and over and over and over again in that first chapter that you are not just citizens of this world, that you are citizens of heaven. But in this passage and throughout this, he's going to change his model and say, part of being a good citizen in heaven is to be a good citizen on earth. Can you flip up the slide that I have there? You know, you can't hardly see it because of the colors, but sometimes we think that our individual lives are what really matters. We have our prayer life or church or all these things that are our own thing. And then we have this whole other side of the world, the lives where we interact with others. And what Peter says in this passage is we can't keep our lives nice and compact, where we just worry about these things that are over here. He says where the rubber hits the road and where our faith really shows itself is where these spots in our lives, everywhere our lives intersects with other people, our jobs, our work, our school, our gym, all that matters. You can flip it. We're citizens of heaven, but we need to be earthly citizens as well. So what does this mean practically in our lives? It means that we need to be part and live God-honoring lives as a good citizen. We need to submit to every human authority, our government, our boss, our church, our organizations that we're part of. And practically, this means we need to obey laws. It means, and I'm preaching to myself here, I need to obey the speed limit. I need to make sure I pass where I'm supposed to pass. It means I need to pay my taxes and not fudge on my numbers. It means that we obey the laws, even the ones that we don't like. So if we're under 21, we're 20 and a half, and we think, it's okay for us to drink. The law is, it's 21, and we need to abide by that, even if it doesn't make logical sense. It means that as if we're a kid, we need to obey our parents. If we're a student, we need to obey our teachers and the school rules. If we're an athlete, we need to listen to our coaches. But, you know, Peter doesn't just spend all his time on everything. The majority of his time he spends actually on government. And so it's worth talking and looking about what it means for Christians to interact with government and to participate in the political sphere. You know, Americans have a great amount of freedom, more freedom than what Peter ever would have imagined. He wrote this letter talking about the king or the emperor and the governors. We said that when Peter was, the people that he was facing were probably not quite facing overt persecution from the government, but that it was coming near. And these are the people that Peter tells us and tells his readers that they need to listen to submit to, and to obey. Now, what does this look like practically in America? You know, submitting means we participate in the political system. It means that we take part in voting and being a good model citizen in that way. It means that we engage with the system. It doesn't mean that we all need to be politicians, but I think it's a good cause for us to consider to be. But it means that we actually think about the people that we put in. And when we feel like they may be making unwise, that we speak to them, that we write to them, and that we do it, however, in a certain way. You know, when it comes to politics, there's a lot of rhetoric, isn't there? I love, personally, my take on politics is I love to listen to the progressive side and the conservative side, because I feel like listening to both sides kind of helps me make my own decision. But I'm amazed that they both will disagree on how to address things, but the one thing that's true on both sides and cuts across the political spectrum is the tone and candor in which people speak. I've never heard people speak so badly about other people until it comes to politics. Republicans will belittle Obama and Democrats, and they'll belittle his character and his person. If you're a Republican, then all you had to do was to listen to the Democrats beat up George Bush when he was in office and make fun of him and belittle him. Somehow, when it happens and when it comes to the political sphere, we think that we can check everything aside and we can attack people's person and character. But Peter tells us in this passage that Christians should do politics differently, that we should be about respecting and honoring people. You know, he raises a very big point, and he reminds us, and Paul says the same thing in Romans, that whether we agree with any political party or ideology, and that person, whether or not we agree with whoever's been put into office, the fact of the matter is that we have a God who is in control of this universe. And whether we agree with their politics or not, the person who is our president or a senator or that deserves respect because God allowed them to be in that place. And so Christians do politics differently. We need to respect them even if we disagree with them. You know, we can argue points. Like, here's the thing. If we think that we need to hold to our truths and we have things that we need to fight for, we need to fight for those issues, and we need to be able to articulate those things clearly. But we don't need to move into character assassination and those things and not give the people that are in charge the proper respect. But you know, Peter's not just talking about this, and he's not just talking about politics. He goes further. He says that if we have a job, we need to respect our bosses, and we need to work hard. We need to be a model employee and a good employee. That means we show up on time and work hard. If we're a business owner and we sign a contract, it means that we actually see it through, and we don't negate on it. We don't weasel people. If we eat at a restaurant, one way we can submit to people and we can show and treat them with honor and respect is to tip well, not be stingy with our money. We need to be participants in our neighborhood associations and our HOAs. We need to abide and treat those people with respect, because that's what godly people do. They follow Christ in different ways. Now, I know that as soon as we talk about submitting to authority, we have a little lawyer voice inside of us. It says, I object. I'm the exception. The rule that I don't like really isn't that great, and I don't have to abide by it. And Peter tells us, and I want to make it clear, that Christians are not bound by the law. They're bound by God first. And so Simon and his resistance in an evil German regime should not feel guilty at all. And there may be times in America where we really do need to speak up, where we need to speak against laws that are unjust and unfair and go against our moral values. But we can never, as Peter says, let our freedom cover up for evil. You know, sometimes when we feel like we're getting an unjust thing, or when we feel like we don't need to be acting a certain way, when that little lawyer that says, I object, I don't need to follow this law, kicks in, the reality is it has nothing to do with Christian principle whatsoever. It has more to do with us being lazy and want to justify what we want to do. Peter made it clear that he did not always submit to authority. If you look at the book of Acts 4, actually, or Acts 5, the religious leaders of his day said that he had to stop preaching, and Peter refused. If you look at other Old Testament stories, in the story of Moses, the Old Testament midwives were told that they had to kill the baby boys, and they had ethical, and they should have ethical issues with that. And they refused to do it, and that's why Moses ended up being in a basket and was saved. There's practical times when we need to not submit to authority, but I sometimes wonder if we allow our rebellious nature to speak more than our principle. You know, I've ran into a bunch of different practical examples of the way that there may be times for us to stick to our Christian faith and not submit. And one I would run into a lot when I was a youth pastor is a teenager who may be converted to Christianity and wants to start taking their faith seriously. And they start sharing their faith with their parents, and their parents are resistant. Maybe they got a single mom. And then usually what happens is they get into these different points where Christians kind of live differently. And the one that I'd always see over and over where parents would actually kind of tell their parents or their kids maybe bad advice is when it came to dating. You know, you always have this teenager who's excited about living out their Christian faith, and they kind of say, hey, you know what, I'm going to be absent. I'm going to wait till marriage until I get married. And then parents will laugh at them and say, that's ridiculous. Why are you doing that? I've heard of parents saying, like, you need to sleep with at least 4 people before you get married and your partner so you can tell if they're good in bed. It's ridiculous. But there's a prime example of how a Christian teen who's told to submit to their parents may need to hold up the exemption and say that's not right. You know, I know people who have worked and faced situations where their bosses are trying to get them to lie and fudge their numbers about how many hours they worked at work so they can get more billable hours. Or where somebody is delivering goods into a spot where no one's there and they're asked to fudge how many pounds of sawdust or whatever they did, they dropped off. You know, will be things like that where we're encouraged to fudge and to do things that are against our kind of moral fabric, the way that God's designed us to be, that we're going to have to stand up and say that isn't right. But this is an exception to the rule. And what Peter tells us here is we're to submit to earthly authority until it causes us to disobey God. Which brings up our last question, which is, what's Peter's motivation for this command? Like, why does he tell us to submit to authority? Why is this so important? It's interesting, Peter doesn't tell these people that they should act this way so their life will go perfectly and they won't suffer. Likewise, Peter doesn't say, submit to your government so we avoid imprisonment and fines, although those are good things. Peter doesn't say that he should do it because if you do, you'll get in good with God and he'll spare you from trouble and give you everything you wanted. Peter says that if you don't treat others this way, you'll make God love you more. Rather, Peter tells us 2 things as our motivation for doing it. Submit yourself for the Lord's sake. And he says, not because you have to, but because you're free to do this. He says, live as free men and live as servants of God. You know, we live this way. We're good citizens, not because it makes us better or more right with God. But we live this way because our faith in Christ and being loved when we're unlovable and unperfect frees us up to live in a more godly way. A story is told of a young woman who was married to an abusive husband. Her husband was controlling, and each day he created a list of tasks that he expected her to do. Clean house, or clean this, or clean the steps, or whatever it may be. Cook this dinner, wash their clothes, and every day if she didn't do those things exactly the way he wanted to, he would beat her, which we have we're totally against abusive relationships. This man died, and you can tell, it scarred her, but she lived in fear, and every time she did those tasks, when she faced the abuse, she did it because she had to, with this kind of anger and a cynical attitude towards it. Thankfully, she got remarried, and she married the exact opposite of her husband, a loving man who didn't have rules whatsoever, but just loved her and treated her the way that she needed to and reminded her and thanked her for everything that she did. And she was going through one of her books and she found the list of what the abusive husband had always made her do that she hated to do and did it out of spite. And she realized that in this new marriage, this marriage related to love, she was shocked that she was actually doing everything that she had done before. But there was a difference in her heart about the way she did it, because she did it out of love rather than because she had to. And that's kind of what Peter's saying, that our freedom is when we've been impacted by God's love, that we do things not because we have to, but because we want to show Christ our love. You know, we also, when he talks about freedom, when God is our center and when he's what really matters, we're free to act in a way that where maybe we can take a risk for our job, because we know that even though we don't, even if we would lose our job because our boss would come at us, or even if it means that we would make less, that our true security isn't found in money, but it's found in the eternal life that we have. You know, when we get pressured to act a certain way and when we need to stand up against it and say that isn't right, we don't have to fear the relational turmoil or hurt that's going to happen, because we know that we have a constant relationship with Christ. And we're free to live this way because we don't have to worry about earthly success or monetary gain, because we know that we have an eternal treasure. This is one of the reasons why he said. But the other reason that Peter gives as motivation to submitting is, the reality is, like I said, submitting is completely countercultural. We do not like to submit. We can say we do, and we can say that we're okay with it, but in practice, it's much harder than what we would like to think. But there is one who submitted for our sake, and that was Jesus. And Philippians 2, verses 5 through 11 says that your attitude should be the same of Christ Jesus, who being the very nature of God, did not consider equality with God as something to be grasped, but made himself nothing, taking on the very nature of a servant. Being made in human likeness and being found in the appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to the highest place, and gave him the name that is above every name, that at the name of Jesus every knee should bow, in heaven and on earth, under the heaven, and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. You know, when we submit, we give, and when we treat people with the respect and humility that Peter urges us to do, we show them Christ in a little way. Now, I don't know about you, but the one issue that I hear over and over and over again on some reasons why people don't necessarily engage or even think about Christianity is our hypocrisy. And the reality is when we're Christians, we're going to talk and believe one way and live another. That's why we have confession, to admit that we're wrong. But nothing can keep people from engaging with the story of Christ more, I think, than our hypocrisy. Because when people can see us live one way and act another, or talk one way and act another, they don't even have to ever really fully engage with Jesus Christ. And Peter's motivation, the last motivation, is that he says that if we live and treat people and respect and submit to authority, that it's by God's will that by doing good you should silence the ignorance talk of foolish men. You see, when we get out of the way, when our actions line up with what we speak, then people are forced not to deal with us, but they're forced to deal with Christ. When people find out that I'm a pastor, conversations can go multiple ways. It can engage in conversations, or it can kill conversations pretty fast. And so for me, I always remember I got to watch what I say. And we need to watch what we do in small ways. There's a guy who really gets it, the way that we can kind of share the gospel in those ways. But the one thing I want to say is, we're all pastors. Peter says, actually, in the earlier section, that we're all priesthood, and it means that when we claim to be a Christian, we all wear kind of an emblem on our chest, and we need to kind of exhibit what Christ is like. And we need to do it not in those moments where it's easy, but we need to do it those moments when it's hard. I want to end and close by just sharing a story. It comes from an article called in Leadership Journal. It's by a guy named Gordon MacDonald. Gordon MacDonald kind of heard from his friend a similar challenge to what I'm giving you today. And look, if you're kind of angry at me today, I'm not surprised. We don't like to talk about submission, and our tempers can kind of flare. I didn't like doing my study myself because it challenged me to kind of really think about things. But Gordon was challenged in a similar way by a friend who was going through a completely, an utter chaotic and bitter church split. Unfortunately, when churches go through difficult things, we can be sometimes nastier than others. And the friend asked him how he was getting through it, and the friend decided to take the higher road. And Gordon asked him, well, why did you decide to do it? And the friend responded, someone asked to show Christ in this thing, and somebody challenged me that it had to start with me. So Gordon decided that he was going to try and show Christ in whatever small ways he can, even in the midst of conflict when he didn't necessarily want to submit. So Gordon is a speaker. He goes all throughout the United States, and it was like his fifth travel day within like 3 or 4 months. And he got to the Boston airport, and he realized that he got to the ticket counter, was excited, thought it was going to be a great day, until he went to the ticket counter, and the agent reminded him that his ticket actually wasn't from Boston, it was from another city in New Hampshire, and that he had actually messed up. Either he or whoever had booked it had made the wrong mistake. And McDonald said, well, I'm here, is there any way you can just rebook me on the flight? And the lady said, sure, but it's going to cost you $360. Now, McDonald was shocked. His pride rose up within him. He said to her, I'm a 100K customer on your airline. I'm like elite plus. I give you guys all my business. Can't you just get me the flight for free as a courtesy? The boarding agent said, hey, my hands are tied. It's going to cost you $360. And then McDonald remembered this story that his friend told him about those times when we have to submit for the sake of Christ so we don't get in the way. And he says, I had all these zingers in my head that I wanted to give this lady before I gave her the $360. I don't know if he flew United, but his comment was going to be something like, he goes, the ungodly part of me wanted to say something sarcastic like, so much for the friendly skies, because that was United's ad campaign. But he knew that would hurt the other person, but he wanted to stick it to her because he wanted the company to feel his hurt and injustice. But as I said, he remembered the advice that the friend said, and he decided to swallow his pride, to let go of his ego, and to try and show Christ to her in kind of a different way. So this is what he did. He said, before I pay you the $360, let me say one more thing. I messed up. I'm the one who went to the wrong airline. But 6 weeks ago, I came here to take a flight to the West Coast and discovered that the airline had canceled my flight and hadn't told me. They said they were sorry, and I forgave them. Then 2 weeks later, on a flight to Europe, the airline lost my luggage for 2 days. They said they were really, really sorry, and again, I forgave them. Last week, on a third flight, they got me my destination 2 hours late. Your people fell all over themselves saying how sorry they were for the delays. And do you know what? I forgave them again. And now I am here on the fourth time in 6 weeks wanting to fly with you again. See how forgiving I am? But this morning, the problem's mine. I admit it. I forgot that I'd scheduled myself out of another airport, and I'm really, really sorry I made this terrible mistake. You guys have said sorry to me 3 times in the last 6 weeks, and each time I've forgiven you. Now I'm willing to give you my $365. But I'm asking you to forgive me and to put me on the flight without having to pay that. Something changed in the boarding lady. He took her time out. She considered his idea, and she started typing. She says, you know what? That really does make sense to me. I'll see what I can do. After writing a novel in the computer, he got on the flight without having to pay $365. He writes this. That morning, a Christ-like attitude won. The airline forgave me, and the skies were indeed friendly. and I didn't have to pay an extra $360. But more importantly, he says, in this increasingly crowded, noisy world, we encounter these moments more and more. Our witness to Christ is eroded by these constant clashes, even our innocent mistakes that possibly no one's to blame, where we have a choice, where we can either respond and submit in a loving way, or we can engage in hateful exchanges and vengeful acts. He said it's easy in those moments to get sucked into it all. But the best way we can show Christ is to stay above the fray. You see, McDonald got it. He understood that sometimes being right isn't always what it's about. Sometimes it's about submitting even when we don't want to submit. This world hates our submission. But when we submit, we can show them that we've been affected by the one who submitted greater for us. When we did wrong, he gave up everything for our sake. And by doing so, we can show people Christ. This is why Peter says our submission is so important. Let's pray.